This show is produced and hosted by Mark Weber. The show is sponsored by G3 Apparel. The views expressed in the following program are those of the sponsor and not necessarily the opinion of 710 WOR or iHeartMedia. Who is Mark Weber? He's a self-made business executive here to help you find your success. From the New York City projects to the Avenue Montaigne in Paris, his global success story in the luxury world of fashion is inspirational. He's gone from clerk to CEO twice. Mark is classic proof that the American dream is alive and well. Here's your host of Always in Fashion, Mark Weber.
I know it's September, but I miss September. I've been walking in the rain, a good place to think. You can't help, though, but feel sadness in the rain. But for me, I also feel the opportunity comes with the cleansing of the rain. It's September. I've always had a love-hate relationship with September. Charles Dickens gives me the words for this.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair.
That's how I view September. It's the best of times or the worst of times, but in my case, the saddest of times. September is the time for the world to cleanse its palates, start fresh. It's also the time of 9/11 we can never forget. The city comes alive in September, but I also remember the city after 9/11, shockingly quiet. The city in complete silence on Fifth Avenue, every day at St. Patrick's Cathedral, memorializing the lost policemen and firefighters. Never before have I experienced that quiet, a soundless, respectful city. September has always been a pivotal time in our lives. I've always struggled with September. From my earliest memories, the summer ending brought disappointment and sadness. However, it led to school beginning, bringing new anxieties, but I have to admit, excitement facing a new year. New experiences, new books, new pens, new bookbinders, new clothes, new shoes, new subjects, new people, new classrooms, new teachers, some years, new schools. Yeah, I have mixed feelings, the highs and the lows of September. In my career, particularly in the fashion, retail, and luxury world, September is a pivotal point in time. Spring and summer is behind us. Vacations are forgotten instantaneously. There's a new season, the most important period, fall leading into holiday. It's a time to celebrate spring and summer performance or lick your wounds. If you didn't perform and the summer wasn't kind to you, you have to move on. But everything gets to reset. Everything gets to redirect their efforts, reset goals and strategies. T-shirts to sweaters, bathing suits to pants. In the city, the people dress up. Yes, it's exciting. From summer to September, now it's like living on another planet. It's different. Yes, a totally different vibe and posture. Baseball is reaching the World Series. Football is beginning anew. The U.S. Open is in Arthur Ashe Stadium. It's the place to be. Except for the city, it's Fashion Week, which dominates the headlines. All the international press are here. All the celebrities are converging on New York City. All the power brokers and investors are here. All the players in the fashion industry convene in New York City for the next 2 weeks that are actually known as Fashion Week. And we're all dressed up in the fall's latest fashion trends. September, yes, is the worst of times, but it's also the best of times. Perhaps September is the most important personal time. You get a chance to reboot. You can be whoever you choose to be come September. September is a reset. You can be more professional. You can approach your career with a new vigor. You can decide how you want to look, talk, and behave going forward forever. September is the month that reminds us that packaging yourself is as important as the products you package. Who do you want to be when you grow up? You can look at yourself differently. You could speak differently. You could approach everything differently. You can change. And as I walk along and think about where I'm going, I miss the September before the world changed. We're living in difficult times. It's September. 9/11 is a week away. However you spin it, America just humiliated itself in the world stage, and our people once again have lost their lives, needlessly. We're dealing with the latest wave of a deadly disease, reminding us it's not life as it were. There's distrust in government and disunity at unparalleled levels. It's the worst of times, yet there is excitement for life, a zest for life, an insane drive to get out there and live your life. That's the best of times. I do miss September. I miss the innocence. I miss the times before events changed September. I miss the September issue of Vogue. In fact, I miss all magazines. I miss going to the theater without a mask, worrying that the air is contaminated. I miss sitting next to people, not liking them, of course. That's who I am, but scared they are carriers? I miss trust in government. I miss eating indoors. I miss a clear head. I miss being vapid, worrying only about whether I look good, whether I look cool. I miss going everywhere. I miss September. I'm still walking. It's no longer raining. My head and conscience is clear. I'm no longer feeling sorry for the world. I'm no longer feeling sorry for myself. It's time to pick it up, Mark. Time to get busy. Get on with life. See the bright side. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy September. There you have it. September. I miss the simpler times, but I'm excited for the future. Some could argue that September is the most exciting moment of the year. Now that I've brooded, been melancholy, walked down memory lane, now that I've got to think it through and talk it through, now that my head's in the right place, allow me to introduce you to my son, my lawyer, co-host Jesse Weber. Can't help it, Jesse. I do miss September and happier times.
Very melancholy. Very poetic. Very poetic. I think you made the point pretty clearly. We've all seen better times, but let me be the glass half full kind of guy, which I think I'm pretty much always on this show since you're constantly negative. I see it differently. I think the future's pretty bright because we do live in the greatest country in the world. It's still the greatest country in the world as of right now. Hopefully it doesn't change. This is the most exciting city in the world. They said New York was dead, came back. I think this is really a lot of exciting things are happening. You know, this time of year, the Yankees are doing great. They're winning. The U.S. Open is putting a spotlight in Queens. That's this time of year. Fashion Week coming back. Runway shows coming back. Live runway shows are coming back. We have the restaurants open. Hotels are taking guests back. Ubers you can take always back and forth. Everyone is coming back from the Hamptons out east. They're coming back to the city. I think September's a great time. I'm excited for September. And got to say, with all due respect and great reverence, blah, 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 I hate to say this, and I want to say it carefully, but I think you were more fun when you were the master of the universe. Now on radio, not so much.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. So you're saying I used to be important?
No, I'm not saying important. I didn't say that. I don't think that. But in September, since that's what we're talking about, this was a time in your career that, how do I say it? Well, you were working at a real job. I mean, I hate to say it. You were working at a real job. And they had benefits. We had certain benefits. The U.S. Open, we went to. We had great tickets to that. The runway shows. Front row at the runway shows. Amazing. Hobnobbing with celebrities. Backstage access. Fashion Week. It was fashion night out. We were going to all these cool parties. It was an exciting time.
So you're saying I used to be important?
I'm not saying important. I'm not saying... No, just stay out of that. I'm not going there.
Sounds like you are.
You're the one who picked this topic, okay? I miss September. You miss September. Aren't I allowed to miss September? You were right in the thick of it. You said it. The runway shows, front row at the Open, the after parties. I can be honest. I miss September also.
Okay, so I'm irrelevant?
Annoying. No, you're not irrelevant. You're my father. You're never irrelevant.
You always said I'm still important. Doesn't sound like it.
We're a little bit removed, right? We're a little bit more removed from the bigger life that we used to have in September.
Now I'm feeling guilty that I gave it up.
You don't have to feel guilty. You should never feel guilty. We do right now, let me be clear, we still have it great, right? We had the experiences when you look back that not a lot of people had in the first place. And I really think that's what the show should be about. If you ask me if I could be the director of the show, I think you should tell some stories about the September that we miss, the September we used to have, even though it's great right now. I mean, we're fortunate.
All right. It sounds like I'm irrelevant, but okay, that's the point. I just didn't realize you wanted me to say I used to be important.
You are important.
Yeah, right.
Just be relevant now, okay?
Swell. Yeah, okay.
You know what, you're a baby. Don't be a baby. You have a lot to talk about. Just get back into it.
All right, never mind. This is Mark Weber. This is Always in Fashion. I used to be important. But to be honest, I'm loving my simple life now. It's simple, but it's significant. And that's for another show. Tonight, it's I Miss September. And to get things rolling, Jesse mentioned front row at the U.S. Open. I want to talk about that for a minute, because you want to talk about missing something. I miss going to the U.S. Open. Now, put that aside for a second. I've been invited to this year's U.S. Open by a number of powerful companies that will allow me and the boys to sit in certain areas that are great, but nothing compares to what we had in my former life. And I want to talk about that. Let's see, where to begin? I'm sitting in my office one day. My title at the time was, Vice Chairman of Sportswear at the PVH company. And within my purview, all the sportswear brands reported into me. And one of them at the time was the Izod brand. For those of you who don't remember, and those of you who are actually born after this happened, Izod and Lacoste became one brand in the United States. This goes back to the 50s. The Lacoste brand wanted to expand into the United States. There was a company that owned the Izod brand that was well known in the United States. They suggested to the French company to merge the names, and it was called Izod Lacoste. It was probably the biggest marketing blunder in the history of the world, but let alone, for sure, the single biggest marketing blunder in the fashion industry to merge those two names. Because over the course of time, Izod Lacoste grew and grew, and eventually became very popular priced, over-distributed, and the French wanted their brand name back. And through negotiations, they finally bought the name back and separated the two companies. There's Izod and there's Lacoste, and that's how it's seen today. One day, anyway, we were running this company. We bought it out of bankruptcy, and as vice chairman of the group, it reported into me. And the president of the golf and tennis division came to see me and said, "Mark, I need to talk to you about the U.S. Open." I said, "Haven't we talked about that already? It's going to be in Shinnecock this year, and we are supporting certain players." No, Mark. I'm talking about the tennis open. I said, "The tennis open? All right, that's a new one. What about it?" He said, "Over a course of time, we found out when we bought the company, we have the reserved rights to the box seats in the U.S. Open. And I want to know if you want to take them or not. What do you want to do?" He said, "I'm not sure. It's expensive. Let's say it was $100,000. I don't remember the exact number. It's $100,000 to have the box for the entirety of the tournament. I'm sure it's great. We can entertain clients. And it's something you might want to consider." I said, $100,000, that's a lot of money. You know, it's interesting in general. When companies buy other companies, the CEO, the presidents, they all want to show how they run lean and mean companies, and they want to eliminate as much of the overhead as they possibly can so that they could justify the purchase and show how smart they are. I'll never forget when May Company, one of the large department store conglomerates out on the West Coast, bought Robinson's May, which it was called, was the Robinson's Department Store. Robinson's was the carriage trade. It was the Neiman Marcus of California. It was a beautiful store. I'll never forget going out and meeting the chairman. And he takes me in this room, which was one of the most beautiful rooms I've ever seen, an incredible dining room. And he sat there and he said to me, "You know, Mark, the first thing I did when I came here was eliminated the private chefs, eliminated the butler service, eliminated all the entertainment and all the lunches and dinners that we served here. I sat there and I looked at him and I said, are you crazy? This is amazing. He said, yeah, Mark, but it's not right for our culture. So with that as a backdrop, this guy comes to me and tells me you have a $100,000 box at the U.S. Open. And I said, you know. But I had the wherewithal at the time to say, I'll tell you what we should do. Can you arrange with the U.S. Tennis Authority, the one who runs the event and who has control of these box seats, to meet us there and show us the grounds and what's going on? And he said, sure, I'll do that. About a week later, I take a drive out to the tennis center, the Arthur Ashe Stadium. I walk in the center. I had never been to a tennis tournament before, and I look, and it's kind of amazing. If you've never went to a professional ballpark and you go to Yankee Stadium, you're in awe. The size, the scope, the greenery, all the billboards, all the stuff going on takes you aback. I'll never forget how I felt that way when I went to Yankee Stadium to put up a billboard. But here I am 20 years earlier. I'm at the U.S. Tennis Authority's Arthur Ashe Stadium in Forest Hills, and I'm looking down from the highest seats where you enter, and I say, this is amazing. I can't believe how nice this is. Can you take me to our seats, to our box, so I can see it? And we started walking down. And we continue to walk down. And we continue to walk down until we get to the front row. We have a box. Three seats in the first row, three seats in the second row. This is our box, Mark.
By the way, explain, it's literally right on the court. You could like reach over and touch the court. That's how close it is.
Oh yeah, it's extraordinary. We're so close to the players, we could talk to them. Every time they came off or on, we would talk to them. They would sign autographs. They might give us a ball. They might give us a shirt or a tennis racket. I'm talking, you can't get any closer. And our box was right at the service line. Perfect, perfect place to be. And it's amazing. So I look at the head of the tennis authority that's actually working with us on this box. I said, how is it that I have this box? And he looks at me and says, I have to tell you, there's probably no less than a 10-year wait list for these boxes when they come available. But in your case, when you acquire the Lacoste brand, this seats date back to Rene Lacoste in the 20s, when he was the finest tennis player in the world. Lacoste took this box, and since that time, it's been grandfathered to them, and you can continue it at your option. And when I looked around, and I saw, as Jesse said, the proximity to the court, and the people, and the players, and I thought about what I would do if we had this box, how would we would entertain, how would we arrange it? We would send out special invitations to the U.S. Open to all our suppliers and our customers. We would have hats that said the name of the company on the brim when they showed up for the event. We would entertain at the restaurants there. It would be a remarkable experience. And those lucky associates and employees who were doing special jobs for the company, I'm sure we'd invite as well. And I kept the box. And it is extraordinary. Now, I haven't been at PVH for 15 years, and they still have that box. It lasted the test of time, and I would think anybody who gives it up has to have his head examined or her head examined. It's extraordinary. And of course, since that time, every year I request seats and we go there once or twice a tournament, and it's been amazing. But what is the lesson here? Why am I even telling you this?
Wait, before you do that, I have to explain one quick story. For anybody who's a tennis fan, you might remember when Andy Roddick won the U.S. Open and he jumped into the stadium to give his then girlfriend Mandy Moore a kiss. He like brushed right past us. We were right there. I'm sure if you look at video from that, we're in it. That's how close we were.
So being that you're talking about it, Jesse, did you love it or what?
I absolutely loved it. First of all, I have to tell you, I'm not the biggest tennis fan. But when you're sitting there so close, you feel like actually the umpire. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. It was absolutely incredible. I saw all the celebrities back in the day, believe it or not. You know who was an avid fan of the U.S. Open? We had better seats than him. Trump. Remember Trump would always be there? He sat in his box. I was watching him the whole time.
From up there, high up. Nice luxury box, but he wasn't on the floor, that's for sure.
I'll never forget, sitting a few rows past us was Wayne Gretzky. And I remember you told me to go up to him, get his autograph. I was a little boy. You said, I want you to get an autograph from him, but also get it from his wife, too, because she was like somebody who was famous.
No, what I told you was, to be intellectually honest, ask his wife for the autograph and then get his. And boy, did they love you for that.
That's right. I did do that. That she was like so taken aback. She was, oh, really? Thank you. Oh, wait. I have one other cool story. You talked about how the tennis players would give out things. They'd throw out the balls. They'd throw out their rackets. Gigi Fernandez, who was a very big tennis player back in the day, after she won her match, she takes off her shirt. She hands it to my brother. Again, we're in the front row, and then walks off the court. My brother Jared had that shirt hanging up in his room for like 15 years. Never washed it, her sweaty shirt. It was hysterical. But other than that, the food was incredible. Like all the ice creams, the pizza, we bring it right down there, we eat it. And then all the souvenirs, the shops, the whole event was incredible. And I loved every second of it.
Well, I did too. And I loved entertaining the senior most retailers, you know, the highest level CEOs, presidents of all our customers would come with us to the open. And it was a great, great event. And I enjoyed being important then, Jesse. But there is a lesson here, more than anything else, why I'm telling the story. When they came to me, do I want to retain the box? The simple answer was no. Nobody would ever question it. Nobody would ever known. But I believe in due diligence. I believe in being thorough. I believe in thinking things through. I am not ready, fire, aim. I am aim, ready, fire. And the fact that I took the time and I had the wherewithal to say, let's go see it firsthand by myself with my own eyes, I realized what a gem it was. So those of you out there, if you're looking for a lesson in business tonight, always do due diligence. Do your homework. Think things through. And you too might be sitting front row at the U.S. Open. Anyway, it's September. And I'm talking about, I suppose, missing September before the world changed. Stick around. We'll be back. We'll continue.
Always in fashion.
I am so excited that the world is starting to open up, that we see hope and we're getting interested in the way we look and dress again. I want to talk right now to the women in this country. It's time to come back. And you have a tremendous opportunity to look your best again. And I'm particularly excited to talk to you about Casper, the brand for women's related separates. Casper is a very, very stylish, contemporary brand that is going to clearly match the way you want to live your life going forward. There's so many things to do again. There's so many things that you want to accomplish, whether it's at home or at work. Casper has crafted an updated collection, a modern collection of easy, effortless classics that you could wear from morning until night. It's great to be able to wear a wardrobe that you'd wear to work and be proud and you are competitive in that workplace, and then go out at night and feel like a woman. I am excited to start meeting people again and seeing people dress their best. Casper also makes the kind of clothes that you would wear for your Zoom phone calls, whether it's a sweater or a blouse. If you wear jeans, great tops to go with them. Casper has all of your wardrobe needs. They cover you great. They're simplistic, and yet they're thoughtful with all the detailing and the emphasis on refined fabrics. I like looking at women's clothes. I spent 9 years working with Donna Karan. I understand what looks great. Casper has trend-right jackets, blouses, dresses, knits. It's an amazing brand, and it's been around for a while. And if you don't know it, you should go in and find it, and I'll tell you where. You can find the Casper collection at Macy's or online at Macy's.com and, of course, at Casper.com. And by the way, Casper is spelled K-A-S-P-E-R. I don't recommend many brands, but in this case, I will. I am impressed with Casper. Ladies, check it out. You'll see I'm right.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
September. I have mixed emotions about September. On the one hand, it's such an exciting time. We get a reboot. We get to start all over. Spring and summer are behind us. And on the other hand, spring and summer are behind us. And that's kind of sad. We get to reboot. We get to change our clothes, change our wardrobe. It's a palette change. Exciting times. Lots of events going on. On the other hand, it's also the time to remember 9/11. But having said that, I miss September. I miss September before the world changed, when life was freer, when life was simpler. But I also remember all the great times that we, our family, we Americans, and we in particular New Yorkers have going on in the month of September. And nothing excited me more back in the day, as I guess you'd call it, just a few short years ago, was Sundays in the first week of September. Because Sunday was the DKNY fashion show. Now, during Fashion Week, which is really 2 weeks, there are constant runway shows constantly in the Mercedes Center and Lincoln Center. There's one every hour. And then the big-time designers have them at key intervals throughout the week. Whether it's Marc Jacobs or Calvin, in our case, Donna Karan was always Monday evening at 8 o'clock, but DKNY was Sunday. And it was relaxed. It was a different environment than Donna Karan. That's one of the reasons I loved it. Everyone came, well, not everyone. The guys who would come from retail would come in a relaxed, maybe sweater, maybe a sport coat, pair of jeans. I would always dress up to one degree or another for these events. If I would wear jeans, I'd wear them with black suede shoes, a white shirt, a navy blue blazer, and a navy tie. I was relaxed, but yet still formal. There's a lesson in there, guys, particularly with the black suede shoes. You can dress down, but still look formal. But DKNY was on Sunday, and when my wife would come, she would dress, of course, to the nines, look great, but not dresses per se, sportswear. Always looked right, always looked appropriate, and because it was Sunday, it was relaxed. The boys would always come. Do you remember how you dressed for DKNY versus Donna Karan, Jesse?
I remember I wore like a blazer, jeans. I tried to look professionally cool. That's how I dressed.
Yeah, kind of like me. We have some great pictures, I still do, in the den in the house of us in front of all the signs at the runway shows. Every time there's a runway show, I made sure that we, the family, would take pictures in front of whatever the set was for that particular show. But DKNY, being on Sunday, was always a relaxed event. Relaxed in the sense that it just felt different. And it should be, because DKNY was all about energy. It was about the spirit of New York. The runway shows were always fast. They were excitement to the 10th degree. The models were young. They were hip. They were doing things on that runway that felt like the brand. The setting was always about New York City, whether it was daytime or nighttime. And very often the show would switch from day to night during the show. The music was always the trendiest. And I really, really loved it and enjoyed those Sundays at DKNY. But here's a question for you out there. You ever think about this one? How would you spend $2 million in 15 minutes stage a runway show in New York City? $2 million, 15 minutes, and I was responsible for the spending of this thing. The funny thing, at LVMH, no one would ever question what I spent on a runway show. I was always encouraged to spend whatever it took, because runway shows really have two functions. And probably most of you out there would never realize what the number one function was. Let me give you number two first. You want to take a stab at this one, Jess?
To gain attention for the brand.
Yes. In theory, that's the big picture. I'll give you that. But when you think about runway and showing new collections, you're showing them to the retailers. You're giving them a preview of what they're going to see when they come into the showrooms in the next week. And the idea was, is if retail senior-most management would come to a runway show, like there are always CEOs, even on Sunday, who would come to a DKNY show. Some of those people were our best customers, and some of those were taking a peek. Neiman Marcus, for example, would always come. Sometimes they loved DKNY, sometimes they didn't. They always loved the Donna Karan collection. So we'd see them on a Sunday, hope they'd get excited, hope they'd set up appointments, or hope the appointments that they set up would be more meaningful because they would be there to buy because they liked the collection. But believe it or not, that's the secondary reason to have a runway show. It should be the first, but it's the secondary reason. Because in theory, if you have a good brand, if you have powerful salespeople, if you have the right reputation, if you're part of a fashion group like Donna Karan was with, and DKNY with LVMH, you're going to get retailers in that showroom, whether they want to come or not. All it would take is a phone call to another CEO. The first reason has to do with what Jesse said, to bring attention to the brand. We were a global company. We did business in every corner of the world. We had retail stores. We had partners who had franchise retail stores. We had department stores that we sold to. We had small specialty boutiques we sold to all over the world. And you know who comes to the runway shows? And you know who definitely would show up Sunday in their relaxed clothes? You know who would be there from every corner of the world? The fashion press. And when you're staging that $2 million 15-minute exercise, the number one reason is the fashion press. Because they'd come in, they'd look at the collections, they would review the collections, and every radio station, TV station, newspaper, and magazine throughout the globe would cover you, write about you, and present your ideas and for the next season through their magazines, through their online networks, and through everything they could to communicate in this day of social media. It was an amazing experience, and it was amazing to watch. And over the course of the next few months, we would compile all the articles, we would look at all the coverage, and we'd make sure that people covered us properly. Now, I have to tell you, when you do a show, you have your fingers crossed. There's never been a show I walked into where I was comfortable, that I believed made sense. It was always too out there for me, for want of a better word. Businesses have made money on their basics. Take a moment to say this. You look at Ralph Lauren. You look at all the marketing, all the advertising, all the brilliant things they do to promote the brand. But what they really wanted more than anything else is to make money. This is all about making money. And where would Ralph Lauren be with all his collections and black tie and dresses and fragrances and handbags and shoes, watches, jewelry, all the most beautiful people in the world, all those things going on without basic polo shirts? Nowhere. You make money on having basic items. You put the Ralph Lauren polo shirt in your store, if you're Macy's, you put it in 10 colors. And every time you sell one, you bring one out from the back room to sell more. When you run low on white, you call Ralph Lauren, you email Ralph Lauren, however it is they transact business. It's usually done unilaterally without a phone call. It's automatic. You sell 6 pieces of white, it comes back in. And that replenishment and that constant selling of those basic items is what drives everyone's business. Everyone makes money on basics. Doesn't matter what brand you are or what industry you're in. You have to sell your basic items. And back to the runway show. That's the one thing we would never show. It used to drive me crazy.
What did you want them to come out in? T-shirts?
Well, if we had polo shirts or T-shirts, they could come out with them in 10 colors and make it look exciting. If I was doing Van Heusen and it was a men's show, I'd have women coming out with high heel shoes and beautiful leggings wearing Van Heusen dress shirts, even though women don't wear them. I mean, I would try and do it, but none of my ideas ever broke through. And the truth be known, they shouldn't, because I know nothing about staging runway shows and what the press look for. And fortunately, Donna Karan and all her people did. And we were incredible at running those runway shows. And one of the other great things about runway shows, which I enjoyed at Calvin Klein and I certainly enjoyed at Donna Karan, I went to Vuitton's show, I went to Marc Jacobs, I went to a lot of them, I was part of the group, but were the after parties. The after parties were generally incredible. Donna Karan would throw an after party after her show on Monday night in her wraparound terrace beautiful apartment at Central Park West and invite the who's who of New York, celebrities, notables, and I go there as the CEO. Now, during the day, when I'm at these runway shows, I'm the man. I feel like, and I talk about important. I used to be important. When you're shaking hands as a CEO, when you're representing a company, there's no greater feeling until you go to Donna's after party. See, Donna and I had a love-hate relationship. On the surface, we were partners. Her job was to create. My job was to make money. And as much as I respected her, and as much as I hoped she respected me, when it really came down to it, it was hard to like each other. I only had one goal in mind. I was entrusted to make money for LVMH. By the time I showed up at LVMH to run the Donna Karan Company, forget all my other titles, CEO of LVMH Inc., I was a member of the executive committee and the board, they would have thrown anything at me, including money, to make Donna Karan profitable. They bought the company for over $600 million. They had it for 6 years by the time I showed up. Three CEOs never made a penny, and I was determined to do it for them. And by the way, in the 9 years I was there, we always made money. Record year, record year, record. It was an extraordinary run. They were happy. I was happy. The only one who might not have been happy was Donna, because she had other goals in mind. She had a charitable institution that occupied most of her time. It was called Urban Zen. That's where her focus was. She did her job for us. It was still the company that bared her name. But the idea of being profitable, and as I talked to you about basics before, I was there to make sure we spent money wisely. I don't mind spending money. I just hate wasting it. And those conversations often put us at odds. And we had a love-hate relationship. Let's call it that. As I said, I'd like to believe she respected me. I know I respected her, but it wasn't easy. But I tell you what, LVMH respected me because I brought him the profits I said I would. Having said that, I'd go to Donna's party, and there I would walk in as the CEO, and I got ignored. Nobody cared who I was. Nobody cared that I was there. Donna certainly would give me an eyebrow up when I would walk in. She never once introduced me to a single person in her house, ever. I'd walk in, I might be standing next to her. I'd walk in and shake her hand, hi, Donna, and she'd be talking to Tory Burch, but wouldn't introduce me to Tory Burch. I would have to do it on my own. It was fascinating. In the span of a few hours, from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night, being the man at the show, till 10 o'clock to whatever, I didn't exist. I was cellophane. You could just see through me. Now, of course, the people that were from the company were there. I would chat with and we'd talk, and I was the boss. But watching that contrast from being a master of universe to not existing was one of those things that happened to me every first Monday in September. And as much as the world has changed, and as difficult it is to navigate through these times, I miss September. At least I miss what used to be September. Take a break. We'll be back in a minute.
Always in fashion.
This is Mark Weber. I remember so clearly when Donna Karan hit the scene. It was explosive. She was one of the most dynamic designers in the history of the world, and her product was very, very different from anything anyone in America had ever seen. She was modern. She was New York. She was vibrant. When you looked at the business in those days, there were companies like Ralph Polo or Tommy Hilfiger or Nautica, great traditional American brands, but no one identified modern. You wanted modern, you had to find Giorgio Armani. Black was the basis of his presentation, and everything about it had a European chic to it. But not in America until Donna came. Donna was a New York life resident, understood the pace of the city, understood what it was like to live in the city that never sleeps, that goes 24/7. Donna invented DKNY, Donna Karan New York. I'll never forget the first time I saw it. I was in London, and they had built a magnificent four-floor store in a building with an open roof, a glass ceiling. Glass ceiling, I suppose, representing we're changing the way things are done. DKNY was, frankly, nothing short of extraordinary, both men and both for women. Black was the basis of the brand, although the many colors played off the palette. and they all look good against black. Let's face it, we live active lifestyles. We get up in the morning, we do different things. We work, we play. Evenings is about entertaining and seeing the best that New York has to offer. TKNY offers a collection of menswear and womenswear, and both footwear, accessories, suits, shirts, ties, women's sportswear, women's activewear that speaks to the lifestyle that goes with you wherever you want to go. And it's always modern, it's always contemporary, it's always at the forefront of what fashion should be with a New York lifestyle in mind. I've lived the life. I was the chairman and CEO of Donna Karan. I understood what that brand meant, and I can tell you, if you want to step out, and you want to walk away from your traditional roots, if you want to be modern, you want to make a statement of elegance, but in a New York kind of way, with the sophistication of New York, as a person who understands all the city has to offer and all the modern lifestyle in America is about, you find it everywhere. People are forcing themselves, urging themselves to get out and be special and live this lifestyle. DKNY. You can find DKNY at DKNY.com or in Macy's. I'm telling you guys, and I'm telling you ladies, you can look chic, you could look special, you look right. DKNY.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
This all started with me walking in the rain. Like I often do, I have a lot on my mind. I like to think. September is around the corner, and now I'm recording, and here it is September. And I'm thinking about life the way it used to be, and how much I miss September. If I give it some thought, this is a very sad time. I'm embarrassed by what happened to the government. I'm sad by what happened to our soldiers. I'm sad about our commitments and the trust in America around the world. And I'm certainly not happy about the virus and this wave of Delta and the impact it's had on people's lives and people losing lives and getting sick. How could anyone rise above all of that? And yet we have to. It's September. The world is changing. Summer and spring are behind us. We get a new lease on life. Life is different. I've always had mixed emotions about September, from summer to winter, from vacation to work, and here we are, it's September. But I'm happy. After all is said and done, I'm excited. That's what I've determined from my walk in the rain. Stop raining, so you get a new start, and it's always a fresh time. And I've always looked forward to September. But I have to tell you, in the notes of the things I wanted to talk about, I had one thing that I have never talked about, but I love it, and I want to share with you on the radio, that one of my joys in life was making lemons into lemonade. And it has to do with marketing brands. And I had a golf brand. I couldn't afford as a company to compete with the big golf marketeers, Tiger Woods. I remember we wanted to sign Tiger Woods. My sales team came to me and said, he's African-American. He's won the U.S. Amateur 3 times. He's going to be the biggest thing that ever hit golf. Everybody's going to want them as an endorsement. Would you agree that we should try and get them? I said, I'll agree to spend $1 million. Would that do it? I don't know, but it's a lot of money for us. Well, Nike gave him $40 million.
Let me ask you this. If you knew what he was going to become, would you have changed your offer?
Maybe if I was Nike. I mean, we're a small company compared to them. Those sports companies use marketing. They endorse players, they endorse teams, and the payback is tremendous. When I look at Ralph Lauren at the U.S. Open, does he get his payment back? Certainly not to the degree of what happens when Nike endorses LeBron James. I mean, it's just a different set of circumstances. So back to golf, what I came up with is a clever way. I decided to endorse celebrity golf tournaments. I would approach celebrity golf tournaments, and one of them that we approached was the AFI, the American Film Institute. The CEO of Calvin Klein had a relationship with the people on the West Coast. They had been involved with Calvin Klein sponsoring portions of their golf tournament. They introduced me, and I came in and said, I would like to take over the entire sponsoring. Well, we have a title sponsor. It's usually an automobile company that pays us X millions of dollars. But we would look for a second sponsor who would outfit the workers and help us run the tournament. I said, I'm in. And we started these celebrity tournaments. And one in particular was the American Film Institute. And I'll never forget meeting Clint Eastwood and Sylvester Stallone and James Woods and Cheryl Ladd. And I'm just trying to think of one of my childhood idols, Robert Wagner at the time. Mark Wahlberg became a golfing buddy of mine, and Jack Nicholson, and all and on and on. It was an incredible experience. But that's not the story I want to tell you. The AFI, at least when I was doing it for the half a dozen years that I did it, took place Emmy weekend in Los Angeles. And the tournament was held at Riviera Country Club, the famous country club right outside of LA. And at night, we had a cadre of people that we knew very well. One of them was a guy named Rudy. I won't give you his whole name, but he was a close personal friend of Jack Nicholson. And we would play with Jack Nicholson. I played with him personally three times, I believe, and once sponsoring his tournament. I'll never forget with Jack Nicholson. We're out in his tournaments, 8 o'clock in the morning. We're standing on the green, getting ready to hit the ball. And as I'm standing there, I feel something on my shoulder. And I look over, and it's Jack Nicholson's head. He's resting his head on my shoulder. And he said, tell me, Mark, what are we doing here at 8 o'clock in the morning? Jesse, you got a better accent than me for Jack?
Yeah, that was a terrible accent. I think you were trying to do Bernard Arnault there. How about this? Mark, why do we have to get up so early?
And I remember I'm looking at him with his head on my shoulder, and I said, Jack, it's your tournament. You made the rules. It's your fault. Anyway, the point is, Rudy, Jack's friend, would arrange for dinner for us, and we'd always hang out. He was a great guy. Became one of our family, and always involved with us at these celebrity tournaments. Whenever we came out to L.A., which was often, I always hung with him, and I really learned to enjoy him. I lost track of him when I left the company, but it was a great event. One night he says, Emmy night, let's have dinner at the Ivy. And the Ivy's one of the coolest restaurants. It's on Robertson Boulevard. It's the one you see in a lot of movies. I'll never forget I saw Get Shorty. There's a scene with Danny DeVito and Gene Hackman and John Travolta and Rene Russo, what they're actually having lunch at the Ivy, and there's a lot of restaurants. It's one of the cool, cool, hip Hollywood places. Has an outdoor scene that's great. Indoors is great. And I'll never forget, we show up at the Emmys. The night of the Emmys, we're sitting at an outdoor table, and I sit down, and I say hello to Rudy, and he says, hey, you're never going to guess whose table this is. It's our table. No, he starts to laugh. He said, no. You know, I know these guys really well. I come here a lot. Jack's a favorite here. He says, I'll tell you what, when we get closer to the Emmys ending, I'll tell you whose table it is. So 11:30 comes on. Rudy gets up from where he's sitting, comes sits next to me, and he says, you know whose table this is? I said, tell me what you mean. He said, well, generally speaking, the night of these Emmys, this table is reserved by this guy. I went to these guys this week, and I told them I had some big VIPs coming in, and I need the table. And I got it. So I said, so whose table is it? Lorne Michaels. I said, get out of here. This is not Lorne Michaels' table. I'm telling you, Mark, this guy's coming later. He's expecting after the Emmys to sit outside this table, the focal point, and you're sitting in his table, and we've got his chair. I said, this is impossible. Sure enough, Lorne Michaels shows up after the Emmys. And he walks over to Rudy and says, you're sitting in my seat. How did you get my table? And Rudy started to laugh, and it was true. How cool is that?
I mean, that's pretty A-lister right there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was an amazing story, and I'll never forget how I didn't believe Rudy for a minute, but he was right. Back in a moment.
Always in fashion.
It's Mark Weber, host of Always in Fashion. Karl Lagerfeld was one of the world's most celebrated fashion icons. His creative genius still is through with his Karl Lagerfeld Paris collection. Karl Lagerfeld was known for his artistry, his photography, and his fashion design. He was a brilliant, brilliant creator. And he was also known for his cutting-edge and aspirational and inspirational approach to style and life. Included in the Karl Lagerfeld Paris collection is women's ready-to-wear, accessories, shoes, and bags. Karl Lagerfeld also offers a wide range of watches, eyewear, and premium fragrances. The Karl Lagerfeld brand is there for you to be different, to be special, and feel unique. Explore the Karl Lagerfeld collection at karllagerfeld.com.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
I know it's September, but I still miss September. I miss September when the world was simpler, when we had trust in government, when we weren't fighting a disease, when our leadership appeared to be leaders. I miss September when the times just seemed simpler. Simple, but significant. I've always had a love-hate relationship with September, as we all have. It's hard giving up our vacations and our summers. When we're young, it's certainly hard giving up that summer holidays and going back to school. But September is a unique time. The weather's changing. The world is changing. Everything around you's changing. You're changing. It's always been a time of extraordinary excitement, and for me, extraordinary sadness. But nonetheless, I am reinvigorated. I am excited, looking forward to the future. I have good feelings about the way we're moving. And I approach this September with tremendous enthusiasm, believing that the best days are ahead. Having said it, I still miss September. Good night.